Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hello, this is comedian Nazareth, and I love listening to my friend Audrey Russo on Real Talk. It makes me feel smart.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. There's been a lie perpetuated for more than half a century by both the left and the right in politics, and it focuses on Senator Joseph McCarthy. Do you know the historical truth? And Nellie Orr worked for Fusion GPS and was a critical part of the Steele dossier. Don't Americans deserve to know who she knew, what she knew, and what part she played in the spying scandal against then-candidate Donald Trump? Well, we're going to get answers to this and more with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs. And it tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media. And she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West.
Thank you, Audrey.
Welcome back, Diana.
Thank you. Yes, always good to be back. So much to talk about.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I'm going to jump right in here. We've discussed Nellie Orr's part in the fraudulent Steele dossier in the past, especially for her working for Fusion GPS. Now, in your recent article, Questions for Nellie Orr, you present some excellent queries for the one you called the woman in the middle. Would you share some of those with us?
Yes, well, just to start with why she's the woman in the middle, because it's hard to keep these people straight. Nellie Orr is married to Bruce Orr, the senior Department of Justice official who's involved in the entire Trump-Russia study, affair that we're being dragged through all these years later, it seems. And she was also, at the same time, employed by Glenn Simpson at Fusion GPS as a Russia expert. She has great expertise in Soviet history. She has a PhD, and she speaks Russian quite well. And she was the woman in the middle, because while the Steele dossier was being produced by the Fusion GPS on the at the behest of Hillary Clinton and the Democrats, Nellie Orr was their top Russia expert. And we still don't know, and this is one of my questions, we still don't know the extent to which she either directed Christopher Steele or worked with Christopher Steele or edited Christopher Steele. This is still unclear, but one thing I'll throw in there was that Senator Lindsey Graham, as long ago, almost maybe at the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, was already discussing Nellie Orr in terms of having been, in his understanding, the sort of uber editor of the dossier, that she actually was directing some of this Russia investigation or compilation that they were putting together. So she's the woman in the middle. She testified recently, or appeared, she did not testify, appeared behind closed doors, and all we really got out of it as Americans from this meeting a week or so ago was that she said she was married to Bruce and just couldn't divulge things that would impact upon, you know, the marital exemption, where you do not have to testify against your husband in court. Wow. I'm not sure how this translates into an interview in Congress, but that is what we were given. And then I have a list that appeared at Epoch Times and my website, dianawest.net, of questions that I don't know if any of them really, maybe one or two had something to do with Bruce or her husband, but most of them are burning questions that apply to Nellie, Mrs. Orr, the Russia expert, the woman in the middle.
I think it's stunning. So do you think we're going to get, the questions are great, but do you think that any of them are going to be asked of her?
Well, you have to know the background to ask the questions. And I spent a couple of months studying the available works by Nellie Orr. You know, she's unusual in this group because she was a professor. She did publish academic writings, a PhD thesis. She also did book reviews and things like that that are available publicly. And I studied them and learned how to place her in the very political field of Soviet/Russian history. I mean, this is not basket weaving. This is a very hot button issue, always has been. And what I came up with in my research, which first ran at the American Spectator, in fact, that's where the title Woman in the Middle comes from. That was the title of that essay. I was able to read her work and place her in the revisionist historian era that sort of tailed out at the end of the 80s, kind of from the 70s to the 80s. It was New Left and Marxist, Trotskyist influenced. And it really took over the history departments at our universities. And she, coming at the tail end as a PhD student, she was not a progenitor of it, but she studied under some and references many of these people very strongly associated with this revisionist school, which essentially downplays Stalin's crimes, looks at the Soviet experiment, sees good in the communist goals back at the beginning, sees the revolution as having perhaps been perverted, but maybe it was worth it. I don't know. I mean, it's one of these apologetic academic schools that, when you actually realize, can be traced back to Marxists and New Leftists, and I find straight up Soviet agents, which isn't to say that these people were all Soviet agents, but you do see the Soviets using these academics in order to insert their fake news, their fake history.
Right.
You know, you can trace it back, and this is what I did in that piece. And she studied under these people, and her essay, which was on the stabilization of Stalin's collective farming terrorism, essentially it starts from that perspective in terms of, well, if you can stabilize something, if something there, that means there is good to be had. There is a stable society that could emerge from that period of collectivization, which we know killed 6-10 million people, maybe as high as 14 million. I mean, just as much as the Holocaust, at least, died as a result of Stalin's wresting away from private smallholders and farmers into the state system that was known as the Robert Conquest called it the terror famine that resulted from this. Anyway, this is sort of where she comes in. And she also studied in the Soviet Union when it was still the Soviet Union, which also kind of gives you a sense of the kinds of compromises that she and the other scholars who had to essentially have their studies and their archive experiences okayed by the Soviet government. Well, we know what that means in terms of you will not think and study and research certain ideas and certain events and so on. So this is sort of where she starts. And do the members know this on the committees that are looking at this? I don't know. I hope they read my article sometime because I did kind of digest a lot of this. But, you know, she is someone who literally wrote, quote, about the, quote, terror and excitement of the Stalin era.
Oh my gosh, that means
there's terror, yes, but what's the excitement? That's one of my questions. What do you mean by excitement? What is exciting about Stalinism?
Yeah.
Communism. What is exciting about the Soviet era? So that's the kind of thing I would be going into with her, just to kind of get her mindset, because we used to know a lot about, you know, you and I've talked about this, the divide between communism and anti-communism, and it seems fair to place Nelly, at least provisionally, on the more communist side of that great divide that divided us so much in the 20th century. Yeah. Is that a fair statement? I would like to know. I don't know. I'm looking at her writing, say, circa 1990s, early 2000s. Is that what she still believes? Is that a fair assessment? I would start out by asking her about her beliefs as a student of the Soviet Union to get a sense of who she is and where she's coming from, because what we do know about her is that she is at the center of a conspiracy inside our government to subvert and destroy the Trump presidency. And so I want to know who she is.
Sure, absolutely. Let me get this straight. It's no secret that she was involved with the Steele dossier. I mean, there's a paper trail.
Right.
Am I correct? Okay.
Well, I don't know what the paper trail is myself. There certainly is a paper trail of her communications with Glenn Simpson and Christopher Steele and, of course, her husband. You know, we know that they're all in cahoots, I think it's fair to say. And we do know that she was the lead Russia expert for this they call it, you know, business intelligence firm, opposition research, you know, smear firm, Fusion GPS. We do know that. So yes, we know she is part of the creation process, but you know, we don't know exactly what she did. We do know, we have a sense that she was feeding information through her husband that would continue on into the FBI after Christopher Steele was terminated. But, you know, we don't really have a good chronology. Maybe the committee does at this point, but we the people do not. So there are still a lot of questions to ask her, or that should be at least released if they have been asked.
Yeah, we'll have to see if they've done their homework and what we get out of the hearings. But on your last visit, we discussed, I mean, speaking of Russia, we discussed the call to defeat McCarthyism back in the 50s actually came directly from Moscow. But many seem to be confused as to who the much maligned Senator Joseph McCarthy was and what his activities actually were. Now, one major falsehood is the fact that most believe that this senator was on the House Un-American Activities Committee, which is kind of impossible because he was in the Senate and the House the House of Representatives handles this committee, handle that committee. Am I correct on that?
Absolutely. And you'd be surprised, or you wouldn't be, you know, how many professors and experts, so-called, make that extremely silly mistake to associate him with House activities.
Yeah. Could you expound on what he actually handled and correct this long-accepted lie?
Yes. Well, it's an amazing thing because, just in a nutshell, in 1950, Senator McCarthy decided to investigate or dig into as best he could, and he had some very good sources, the number of communists and pro-communists and people who could be called security risks for their associations with communist activity, because there is a spectrum here, that were on Uncle Sam's payroll. I mean, these are not just random people or artists or, you know, just even just put people organizing in a political sense either. These were people, the ones he was interested in, were covert operators working for the other side, which at that point was led by Joseph Stalin, the Soviet Union, who were actually civil servants, who were Washington bureaucrats or political appointees, but mostly bureaucrats, or were inside our defense industries, inside the Pentagon, at a very sensitive policymaking level, for example, the State Department. This is where he was turning his attention. And this had been a problem that started in a very big way over the Roosevelt years and through World War II, and it was not addressed because we were in a military alliance with the Soviet Union in those war years, and for other political reasons, this sort of festered, and there were some, you know, efforts and discussions, but essentially, in 1950, and this was, remember, this was after Alger Hiss, the arch-Soviet agent, had been exposed as a very influential, powerful State Department official who was a Soviet agent. And this was sort of the fear of the country at this point in discovering these things. They were starting to get the great defectors, Whitaker Chambers and Elizabeth Bentley, were starting to talk about these deeply embedded, complicated, widespread cells that were Soviet directed inside the different departments and bureaus of the U.S. government. So this is 1948. We're moving on to 1950. We've seen the Soviet Union develop their atomic bomb. I mean, this is not just out of a vacuum. This was a situation that seemed terribly serious to security-minded officials such as Senator McCarthy, who was, of course, a veteran of World War II and was interested in protecting the country. So he embarked in 1950 on the famous beginning of his investigation really can be started at the moment he had his Senate hearing where he actually went through 81 security cases on the floor of the U.S. Senate in 1950. This would be after his very famous speech where he discussed this problem and drew so many headlines. So this was sort of the genesis of what he was doing. And over his very short span of investigations, he was actually only a chairman after the 1952 election for just a little over a year. And the entire time he was doing this, Audrey, he was being investigated. It's much like President Trump. One after another, investigations were started against him, against his finances, his family's finances, against this and that and the other thing, while he was also doing this really important work. And it's really quite an incredible record he put together over this short span, because he was very dedicated and energetic chairman and was able to create or really highlight this security risk to a point where a lot of them left. A lot of them would be separated by their whether it was Defense Department or Defense Industries in the State Department as well. And we see identified Stanton Evans, who is the foremost McCarthy biographer, put together a list in the year before he died of 50 Soviet agents, communists, or Fifth Amendment cases, people who would not answer questions like, have you spied for the Soviet Union, that kind of Fifth Amendment case, 50 that Senator McCarthy or his committee had brought to light. So that's quite a record, and that doesn't even account for the various things I was talking about in terms of the defense industry investigations he did, where people would just peel off. Mm. And, you know, we didn't really even necessarily follow their careers and figure out who they were, but they just kind of left. Mm. So we were looking at a very effective campaign, and that's why you had a Moscow-directed campaign against him that was so successful that we still, as a society, we still see him in the light that Moscow and the Communist Party wanted us to. And that's what's so very frustrating to you and me because now we understand that, and we hate to see people continue in the ignorance and also the slander. And also, we can't learn from this if we get it so terribly wrong. So this is kind of the overview I would throw out there as the first shocking kind of introduction to the issue.
Yeah. He must have been doing some kind of damage to Moscow's reach here.
Huge.
Yeah, he had to, because they were targeting him, correct?
Absolutely. He was also very popular. In fact, Eisenhower viewed him as a potential presidential challenger, although I don't know that McCarthy was actually interested in that at that time. I'm not sure, but I don't get a strong sense of that, but it was talked about. He was, I believe, about in 1954, which was the year the height of his powers, at the beginning, it's the year he gets married, and it's also the year he gets the Senate censure that people talk about, which was an absolute travesty. But it is kind of what people know. They know he was censured. He didn't leave the Senate or anything. He continued on, but it completely changed the trajectory of his power at that point. And he was actually running for re-election when he died very shockingly and unexpectedly in, I believe it was 1957 or 8. And he was only 48 years old when he died.
Oh, my gosh. He was tortured for doing right, you know?
Yes, he was a great patriot, and he was terribly. He was also a very brilliant man. People don't understand that as well. He came from, I believe a farming background actually, and he ended up going to school on the late side because he ran a chicken and egg business when he was a teenager. But then, when he finally went to school, he went through college and law school in very short number of years, you know, much shorter than the normal, and he would be elected, I believe he was the youngest elected judge in Wisconsin history when he became a judge in the state of Wisconsin before he went off to war and then came back and ran for Senate. So he had an amazing career, and it's really been lost to us because of the fake news, because of the disinformation that has been ground into us and, you know, is continually taught and mistaught. And going back to what you said originally, you know, explain the most simple sort of dumb thing people say is they associate him with the House on American Activities Committee. And that's not possible because he's in the Senate, but it does sort of show you how wrong and how ignorant people can be when they try to recall his historical impact or what he did or who he was.
Yeah, exactly. Big perpetuators of that ignorance is Hollywood. They don't even know. They are so woefully ignorant of history that I won't even go there. So, Diana, where can the listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including American Betrayal?
Yes, well, thank you. The everything I do, whether I publish elsewhere or not, will be at my website, which is dianawest.net, and it also has links to American Betrayal and The Death of the Grown-Up and the other books, and also the new audiobook, which is also available. And I narrated that, as you know, which was a lot of fun.
Yeah. And listeners, hey, the time is passing quickly. We're getting close now to the Christmas and Hanukkah shopping season.
That's right.
So grab them. You know what? You can't get through to your family or friends on these issues. Well, let Diana do it. You grab the books and the audio. Yeah, grab not only the book, but the
like
audio
that.
Version as well. Because, you know, if you can't do it yourself, give it to them. Maybe they'll do it on their own. You know, sometimes people
Drive
tend to
time.
Be yes, exactly. And of course, as always, I'll have these links to my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to AudreyRusso.com, click on the On Air button, and right under the show description, you'll find all the links, including direct links to the books, including the audiobook that Diana just shared. Thanks so much again, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Audrey.